Well, good morning, everyone. Still barely morning by 10 minutes, so we qualify there. And as Mr. Bell said, yes, this is my old stomping ground, so it's good to be back in Hamburg, New York. It's fun to have the church here. For a number of years, I was telling a few people my dad had started attending way back in 1968. We were young tykes at the time and met at different places. One of my favorite spots was it was a movie theater we met at. So as kids, we didn't get to movies often, but we got to know what was playing because we saw the big posters there, and we loved going to the movie theater. And so I think one thing we have in common, we've met at various places over the years, haven't we, as a church? But this is, when I saw it was in Hamburg now, I was excited about that. My mom still lives here in Eden down the road of peace. So it was such a lovely location. It's a beautiful hall. And it's always just a blessing to get together with, no matter where we're gathered, no matter the size, to be together with people of God's mind, God's spirit, and to be here this afternoon, or late morning. It is good to be here with you. I see a couple familiar faces from Estonia from last year. We had just a wonderful, wonderful feast in Estonia. And again, if I know some of you have been there. If you haven't, I would put a strong plug in for Estonia as well. It is a remarkable feast site, a remarkable part of the world, and history, and brethren, and all the things that go with it. I will echo what I heard Mr. Bell say about Mr. Lambert. I certainly pray for that and hope that goes well. He always brings up, I've known him since I've been a teenager and known their family over the years in the church and various things, and have a great deal of respect for the Lamberts and his passion and enthusiasm. It has not seemed to wane at all over the years, so it is good to see his fire for God's word, his enthusiasm, wanting to serve God. And as God's true servant, we just ask that God would also intervene on his behalf as well. And all the other prayer requests that are out there, that we keep those people front of mind. Well, this afternoon, I want to talk about or ask you a question to start out today's message. You don't have to raise your hand or answer this one, but just in your own mind, what would you say is one of your greatest fears? Or one of your great fears. If you think about your own personal situation, your own thoughts, and I know we could go around, and I'm always amazed when sometimes people will say, well, I don't really have a fear. There's nothing I go, oh, this is, I want your life, right? Because sometimes that's not exactly how it works for me. Sometimes it's easy to have fears, right? If we stop and we think about it, sometimes it's the fear of a long sermon, right? Isn't it? That could be right at the top of a list. So I'm going to try to allay that fear for you today, and hopefully that won't be one that resonates in your mind. But you could have fear of financial ruin, right? How am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to get through? How am I going to make it through this difficulty? How about health concerns? All right, I said I'm in town visiting. My mom is getting to an age where she has health concerns and doctor issues and things that she's got to deal with. It can become scary, right? It becomes a little unsettling. And the whole thing about maybe the future, right? We heard about that as well. What does the future hold? What is the future all about? That can be a scary place. How many times we hear it's a scary world, right? What does it mean for our young children? What is going to happen? What is the future about? Those kind of things can evoke fear in us. And so I looked up in Webster's dictionary to say, what's the definition of fear? Right? It says here, fear is an unpleasant, often strong emotion caused by anticipation or awareness of danger. That's the primary definition. Another one they give is anxious concern. A third is profound reverence and awe, especially towards God, the fear of God. And lastly, reason for alarm. And I thought about fear. When we think about fear, I'd like to add a separate definition for us sitting here today. Really, when you think about it, simply put, fear is an absence of faith or trust in God. Right? As much as I want to rationalize and move it around in my head that it could be something different, at the core, at the bottom, what's in place when we have fear, it's really an absence of faith or trust in God. And so you sit here and you think and say, well, how do we have fear if we all trust God? We all have immense trust and faith. But as you'll see through the course of this sermon, trust or faith in God is a process, right? With ebbs and flows. I always think it'd be interesting if we had meters, spiritual meters, that we could look at ourselves on a scale of 1 to 10. Where's our faith or trust meter? It wavers, right? It's like our gas tank. Sometimes it's full, sometimes it goes close to empty. And we'll go through that in the sermon here, but I wanted to talk about this today because fear and faith, they're intertwined, and God has some strong statements in the Bible that says the fearful will not be in His kingdom. On the flip side of the coin, God says, when I return, will I find any faithful? We are to be people of faith, people who are growing in our trust, growing in our understanding of God and who He is, living a living faith. That's why it's a very, very important topic. And I know a lot of people like titles for sermons, so I'll give you one. You can just call it From Fearful to Faithful. So we're going to talk about for a little bit this afternoon, how do we get there? Well, I think the easiest way to get there sometimes is look in the Bible. Look at an example of a person that I think in many ways was very similar to any one of us sitting here as well. I also want to mention, I should circle back, I see some young people here today, which is always great. I'm thinking about, so you're out for school now, but even the thought of a test, right? Getting a test, doesn't that evoke a little fear in your stomach sometimes when they pass it out? Oh, I remember that well, right? Have I studied all the right stuff? And you look at the first questions and you're like, maybe not, right? Yeah, so school and tests, right? So all of us have this whole concept. So I'm hoping it's helpful for all of us just to think about it, regardless of your age. How do we not be consumed with our fears and start to trust, start to act in a way that is relying on God? I want to look at one person in the Bible who we find in Hebrews 11, who is what I would call, Hebrews 11 is really the spiritual faith hall of fame, if you will. The people listed there are people of faith. This person was a judge of Egypt. We find him back in Judges. Anyone know who I'm talking about offhand? I'm sure you do. All right. His name was Gideon. You might recognize that name. So I want to look at Gideon, the example from Gideon this morning, and look at how he went from his spot, which was quite a fearful position, to where he moved with God to be included in Hebrews 11 as a man of immense faith. It's a remarkable thing. And it should be really no different for any of us sitting here this morning, that we can't be transformed as well from the fears that might consume us. And like I said, I keep thinking about that. You think about, you know, the fear of, we heard it in the announcements, right? The fear of what is going to happen after this life. The fear of, can I ever even overcome, you fill in the blank, right? As you start thinking about things, there's a number of thoughts. You know, this weekend, I don't have my family here with me, but I know this weekend my daughter, she was traveling with some friends up to, earlier, she left earlier this week to go up to Michigan. And you start thinking, well, I hope that's okay, right? And these thoughts, and they come over you, right? And you wonder about different situations. How are things at home? I should have taken care, right? Our mind races and races and races, right? And so this afternoon, we'll look at Gideon because he was really, I think, no really different than us. But he was transformed and became a man of faith. Just to give you some quick background to the book of Judges, right? It was a period of judges, 12 judges. Gideon was the fifth. It was a period of about 300 years. And it was a really simple equation. If you had a flow chart, for those of you who like flow charts, it was real simple what's going on with this at this time. Israel would sin. They would be punished. They would cry out to God and say, we're really, really, really sorry. And then God would have mercy. And life would be okay again. And then they would sin, be punished, cry out to God. And this went on for 300 years. Right? So when we find the story here of Gideon, we'll look at this here in a second, in Judges 6, they were going through one of those bad cycles where they were being punished. They were like in phase two of this cycle now. They were being punished. The Midianites had them under siege. And it says there, for about 7 years, they just ransacked, took their food. It was almost like a really bad version of a bully at school with your lunch money at lunch, right? They just took their money, took their food, oppressed them greatly. That's the scene. If the stage were to open, that's where we find Gideon and his family. So turn with me, if you would, to Judges, the sixth chapter. Judges 6. Just start reading here in verse 11. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joaz the Asbarite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the wine press in order to hide it from the Midianites. He had to go to a place where you normally process wine because wheat was usually processed in the field, but he had to hide somewhere where the Midianites would not just see him and take his food immediately. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." And Gideon said to him, "Oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles which our father told us about, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?' But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." Have you ever been at that spot? Where is God? All those things that our fathers told us about, where are our miracles? Where's our deliverance? Where is God? I think God has forsaken us. I don't know if God even knows of our plight anymore. How can you even speak that he is with us? This is a deep, dark spot. This is not a man of great faith at this point. This is a man who's probably disillusioned, probably a bit cynical, and certainly fearful. Certainly fearful. That's the starting point for Gideon. And we move through the story here. The Lord turned to him in verse 14 and says, "Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites." So the angel starts telling him a few things about what's going to happen with him. And he asks him to bring forth an offering, right? And in verse 21, the angel of the Lord puts out his staff and touches the meat and the unleavened bread, and the fire rose out of the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. The angel of the Lord departed. Now Gideon perceived he was the angel, so Gideon said, "Alas, O my Lord, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." Gideon now has starting to realize there's something to this, right? God is showing his presence, as God does at different times in our lives. But it's a starting point. God is working with him. And it's a pretty incredible story, because you've got to understand now, as we're going to see the next thing, God is showing himself, but if we're going to go from fearful to faithful, God is always going to ask us to start stepping forward, to take a step with him. Right, that's the scary part, because if it was all intellectual and we said, yeah, I got it, God. I trust you 100%. I got it. That's good. I'm good now. I don't fear anymore. But God doesn't work that way. What did he say with Peter on the water, right? Walk towards me, right? Follow me. Come to me. So what happens here pretty quick now with Gideon and his story and his relationship with God? Look, it happens in verse 24. Or 25, it came to pass that same night. The Lord said to him, "Take your father's young bull, the second bull of 7 years, and tear down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the wooden image that's beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God on top of that rock in the proper arrangement, and take the second bull and offer burnt sacrifice with the wood of the image that shall be cut down." There in that time, there was really no God worship where Gideon was. It was all Baal and other God worship, right? So now what he's asking him is saying, okay, you have to now destroy this altar that your family worships, the community worships. And you start thinking of parallels in our world today, right? Isn't it hard? Especially for, I think, of the young people in school, people we heard at work. And all our walks, what do we have around us? We have counterfeit God worship, right? And we're asked to say, continue to erect that altar to God. Continue to come and worship me. Continue to step out in faith. Be here today. Do the things I ask you to do, even though they're difficult. Right? That's how faith starts to get a foothold. But that very same night, he doesn't give him a couple weeks, and Gideon has this great feeling he can sit back and intellectualize it. He says, no, we're going to move into action quickly. So what happens? Look at the next part of the story in verse 27. So Gideon took 10 men among his servants and did as the Lord said. But because he feared his father's household and the men of the city too much to do it by day, he did it by night. Right? Wouldn't it be a scary thing to go in broad daylight and destroy everything? No, I can understand that, right? Let's do it undercover by night. Let's get this thing done at night, build it, go back to bed. Hopefully everything goes quietly, right? Isn't that sort of how the mind might think, right? And it says here, when the men of the city arose early in the morning, the altar was torn down. The wooden image was beside it, was cut down. Verse 29, they said to one another, "Who has done this thing?" And they inquired, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this. And they said, bring out your son that he may die, because he has torn it down. They're ready to kill him. Right? Pretty tough spot to find yourself now. And it's pretty neat that his dad, in verse 31, says, okay, would you plead for Baal? Would you save him? Let the one who would plead for him be put to death by mourning. If he is a god, let him plead for himself, because his altar's been torn down. It was pretty interesting. Sometimes you don't think about that, but his dad shifted gears pretty quick, didn't he? He said, if Baal's this great god, let him fight the battle. Let him worry about my son. So sometimes I think, a little side note, is we don't even think about our actions, but they have a great impact on others around us. All right? So now, right, story's over. We could call it a sermon, because Gideon has complete and utter faith, doesn't he? Well, what happens, God wants him to lead an army. Remember, he said, the angel first came, he said, I'm going to use you to defeat the Midianites. Right? The Midianites are still out there. This was just a starting point, right? So now God's saying, I'm going to need you to do that. So what does Gideon do? I think everyone here probably knows the story pretty well, but it's interesting when you go back sometimes and look at the details and try to understand from his mind the progression, right? Because, okay, we got through that one, God. But now we've got this Midianites. These guys are really, really tough guys. And they've oppressed us. How are we going to do this? I need more. I need to see more. So look at verse 36. What does Gideon say to God? Gideon says, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said. Look, how about this? I want to try this. I'll put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there's dew on the fleece only and it's dry in the ground, then I will know for sure that you will save Israel. And when it was so, he rose early the next morning, squeezed the fleece, wrung out the dew in a bowl of water. God did as he said, right? Gideon's good to go again, right? I think it's funny. I think sometimes there's a lot of humor in the Bible when you read through it. And Gideon said to God, he goes, you know, don't be angry with me. You know, if I could just ask one more thing. I really liked what you did with that one, but let's flip it the other way, right? I wanted to see it the other way. And if you can really do that, then I think we've got something. Then I think I can probably go with you, God, because now I know it's all going to work out fine, right? Isn't that how we are with God sometimes? Where I say it's a process. Where are we in that process ourselves? Because it's hard. God, can you show me this? Can you help me see, right? Help my unbelief, right? That's why faith, it is such a pinnacle, such a hallmark of who we are to become as Christians. And as we are humans in this lifetime, it can ebb and flow. But Gideon asking God, and God continued to walk with him through the process. And then we get to chapter 7, when it's finally go time with the Midianites. It's finally time to go to battle with the Midianites. Gideon has his men gathered, 32,000 men. We'll circle back on verse 1, but God said, no, your army is too large. Chapter 7, verse 2, the people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into your hands, lest Israel claim glory for it against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. Right? Isn't that, again, our human nature? We heard about humility in the sermonette. Isn't that our first thing? You know, I got the guys all rounded up. We defeated the Midianites, and now we settle the land. Small detail, right? God allowed you to do that. Right? Isn't that our human nature, the human way, that we'll quickly take on that credit and really push back any responsibility or blame? Right? I wouldn't have gone that direction with it. But if it worked out all right, then you can come and see me, right? God said, no, it's too large. So he said, tell those who are afraid, let them go. Let them go back. So 22,000 turned around and said, now, if I got a pass to get out of this situation, I'm going to leave. We have back home a little reenactment they do in one of our parks back home, a little like Civil War reenactment. And they do, like, you know, those people who dress up in periods of Civil War, and there's a whole group of people who do that. And you see some battle reenactment, but it's a really scary and sobering thing when you see people dress for war. And you'll see the numbers that we're talking about here with the Midianites. It'll make your blood stand still. Right? So when 22,000 men got a chance to flee, they fled. But God said, so in Gideon's mind, he's probably thinking, okay, now we're at the right size, right? No, it's still too big. And we know the story about going down to the river and cupping water with your hand, and who would look up? We kept those. He's left with 300 men. Okay, so we can do some quick math. I'll show you. If you look at chapter 8, chapter 8, this is a little later in the story. After they had defeated the Midianites, they're halfway through the verse. It says, now Zeba and Zalmunna were at Karkor, and their armies were with them, about 15,000, all who were left of all the armies of the people of the east. For 120,000 men who drew the sword had fallen. So 15,000 were left, 120 had died. They started out with 135,000 men against 300. That's 450 men to one, right? Those are not good odds. Those are odds I wouldn't want to sign up for. My daughter has just gone through the whole college application process. If she was looking at a college that was 450 to one in terms to get in, I'd say, okay, let's look at another one, right? Because that's not really good odds, right? It's easily to be scared in that spot. But that's what Gideon ultimately went to with God, right? And they defeated the Midianites with 300 men against 135,000, 450 to one. His army taken down over 99%. He started with 32,000 and had 300. Pretty staggering when you think about it, when you think about where he was, almost in that, huddled up in that little wine press, fearful, disillusioned, cynical, and now a man that God could use to defeat the oppression. So I want to just talk, and that's a great story. You might say, okay, that was Gideonite, that was God involved, that was everything. That's not my world today, all right? So I want to bring it down, boil it down to us in the last few minutes we have of the sermon, give you five takeaways. What do we take away today? As we are on our own path, we're on our own path from fearful to faithful, right? However God is working it out, whatever beautiful way he is dealing with us, because we all have differences in our walk with God, and God knows that, and God has created something that he knows is unique for each one of us. What can we learn from this, and hopefully just take away a few points that we can think about as we go back, and even maybe now during the sermon, you're thinking about things that are running through your head that are fearful thoughts, right? How do we move and keep understanding who God is so we can become people of great faith? First thing I'd say, I have five quick just points here at the back end of this sermon. Remember this, that God knows who we are, even if sometimes we forget. God knows who we are, even if sometimes we forget. I think it's interesting. Go back to Judges 6. When that angel first came on the scene, in verse 12, how does he address him? How does the angel address Gideon? He says, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." Wow. That's how God saw Gideon, right? That's how he knew him, as a mighty man. Certainly Gideon wouldn't have looked at himself. That way Gideon looked at everything about this and said, I'm just a guy here who's trying to get some food and eat and survive, right? I'm not worthy. We heard that in the sermonette. I'm worthless. I can't. I'm nothing. There's nothing good. I'm just the sinner that can't be forgiven, right? Pretty interesting how that angel saw him. In verse 14, he says, "Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you?" Verse 15, Gideon keeps saying, "How can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest. I am the least." And God says what? "Surely I will be with you. It is my might. You are my warrior. You are my son. You are the one that I gave my life for." Right? God has great value. God has great, saw great value in Gideon and sees it with us. Just a couple verses related to that. Ephesians. Let's look at Ephesians 2. We could turn to many, many verses where God says, "You are my sons and daughters. You are this or that." Right? It's good to remember that. That should give us, that should bolster our faith and our courage. remember how God sees us, and it's God who will win the battle for us. Ephesians 2 and verse 10, for we are his workmanship. God has created us in Jesus Christ for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in him. That's a great thing to remember, that God created us individually, uniquely, in Jesus Christ for good works, right? Not to be fearful, not to be wondering, not to be doubtful, but to live for him, to do great things for him. Wouldn't it be great? Maybe God does that with us now instead of you mighty man of valor, you put your name there, you great overcomer. You, the one who endures to the end, right? That's how God sees us. It's even so, sometimes we forget, God remembers. A second point, God is with us every step of the way. We saw that with Gideon, right? All the way from the start, God took time and showed him again when he went to God. God was there. Sometimes it's not always easy for us to see that. Sometimes we doubt, we wonder, like Gideon did at the start of that story. But through his word, through our prayers with him, hopefully we start to see and understand that God is with us. Go back to the story of Gideon. You know, when we realize that, when we realize God is with us, one of the great things that happens, we go from fear to a sense of peace. Peace, that elusive peace that we all want. What did the angel, what did the Lord say to him in verse 23? After he had burned that sacrifice by fire, the Lord said to him, peace be with you. Do not fear. You shall not die. It's a remarkable thing when we start to realize that God is really there. God is in control. God understands that fear is replaced. Fear is replaced by peace. There's a song that's, Christian song that's out there now, Fear is a Liar. And I really like the lyrics to that song right now. And it's, fear is a liar. It'll rob you of your rest and your happiness, is one of the lyrics. And it's so true because that's what it does, right? Restless nights, angst, worry. All the things that happen because we struggle to see God involved in the process. We struggle to see that God is there every step of the way. It's interesting, you know, before that night, okay, so we have the fleece, everything that happened there, getting ready for battle. The night before the battle, right, what happens? Let's look at Judges 7. Judges 7. You have this, and look at Judges 7, verse 8, the very last sentence. Now the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. Can you imagine? You see down below 135,000 men of war. Right? No matter what guarantees you have up to this point, you can still be scared. You can still be fearful. You can still be afraid. Because the moment is still to come. What happens in verse 9? So it happened on that same night that the Lord said to him, arise, go down to the camp, for I have delivered it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down to the camp with your servant. You will hear what they will say. And they went down there and they heard those men talking. You can read it. But it was basically saying that they were going to be delivered into Israel's hands. God again showing himself in the process. So they knew that there was going to be deliverance. Third takeaway, and I hope you've seen this as a theme throughout this, is that growing in faith truly is a process. It's a process that has ebbs and flows. But if you look at the story of Gideon, God came to him, asked him not to go defeat an army with 300 men right off the bat, right? He didn't do that. I always think of what God asks us to do. Sometimes, remember those video games where you get past level one and you get there and now you're on to level two and you're like, well, now you're advancing level three. All the games are set up that way. That's sort of how it is with faith in God and what he takes us to. He said, okay, this is going to seem hard, but you can do it. You got to take down this altar. And then we're going to go from here and we're going to pare down your army. And then we're going to come and we're going to come and we're going to do these things. It's a process that God builds our faith. Same as us as Christians, as we walk every day when we go to school, every day when we go to work, that we have to be growing in that walk and that process with God, stepping out in faith to serve Him. When it's difficult, when it's scary, when it's a lot easier to do something different. You know, I think of the story of Abraham, right? Abraham, what is he called in the Bible? Father of the faithful. Was he always of great faith? Not always, but at the end, it's interesting when he finally goes up into the wilderness to sacrifice his son Isaac, and he's just at that unthinkable spot as us as human beings, anyone who's been a parent, to be in a spot where you would be asked to sacrifice your one and only son, who was supposed to be the heir, have the knife raised, and the angel says, what was the words that were uttered at that point? Now I know. Right? Now I know. Right? And I always think about that in our lives. Where is that spot as we walk and we continue to walk and God says, now I know. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? And God says, now I know you are fully, fully walking, trusting, faithful in me. What an ultimate thing for us to continue to keep our eyes on and fixed on as we walk every day of our lives, for God to have that same thought process. No matter what I throw at you, and this is a high bar again, right, for all of us. This is an extremely high bar. I'm not saying it's easy. That's why we get a lifetime. But that's really the ultimate goal, right? For God to say, now I know that you are fully mine. And you fully walk with me. But just remember, it's a process. And in that process, there's going to be ebbs and flows. But that's what we're trying to get. And that's where Gideon got to as well. Fourth thing I will mention. You know, we can't be too small for God to use, but we can be too big. We can't be too small for God to use. You think about that one. That ties in again to the sermonette about humility, right? God doesn't need our greatness, our ability to accomplish His desires, His wills. He's looking for something totally different. When that angel went down, can you imagine when they choose and they pick that out? They said, that's our guy right over there, the guy who's huddled up against the rock, trying to hang on for dear life. That's going to be our hero, right? It's a story throughout the Bible. That's why King David was selected king. God didn't look as everyone around them looked for a king. You know, we can't be too small. In fact, we want to be quite small when it comes to that. Because if we're too big, God can't use us. Look at Isaiah 66. It's just one verse on this topic. Isaiah 66. Again, it's a verse we know quite well. But again, like we heard in the sermonette, what does God require of us? Those are always just great verses when God gives us a list, right? We should sit up straight and say, wow, God wants us to be walking justly and being merciful and being humble. Those are great, great things for us to keep striving to model our lives after. And then you read another one here. In Isaiah 66, in verse 2, God says, well, let's go in verse 1. Heaven is my throne. Earth is my footstool. Everything is mine, essentially what God is saying. I am not in need of you. And God is saying, it's all, everything I've created. Where is the house that you will build me? Where is the place of my rest? All those things my hand has made, all those things exist. I don't need those things from you. I'm not looking for your greatness to come into my world. What I am looking for, it says in the latter half of verse 2, is on this one will I look, one who is pure, of a contrite heart, one who trembles at my word. Boy, what a wonderful spot if we find ourselves there. And it ties in so well with this sermonette about humility, one who is poor of spirit, one who knows his place, one who trusts in God, one who trembles and wants to trust and follow God. I always think of the Pharisee and the publican, right? The one that wouldn't even look up at God because he said, I'm a sinner. Right? We can't be too small for God. We can't be. Go back to Judges 7 in verse 13, just looking at the story there. That night before they, Gideon was asked to lead the army against the Midianites. I think it's interesting, again, when the Midianite soldiers were talking amongst themselves in verse 13, when Gideon came down, there was a man telling a dream to his companion. That's what God said. Go down to the camp. Listen to what they're going to say. That'll make you feel better. And so one of the men was telling a dream to his companion. He said, I have a dream. To my surprise, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian. It came to a tent and struck it so that it fell and overturned and the tent collapsed. Then in verse 14, his companion answered and said, there is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand, God has delivered Midian. But look what he talks, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp. It was just, again, it's God's providence. It was going to be God who was going to deliver this, right? It was just, he was using Gideon, right? So we can't be too small for God to use. And the last thing I would say, and I didn't read this verse, there's one little verse here at the end of Gideon's life. Gideon chapter 8. After the conquest was over and the oppression of the Midianites was subdued, go to chapter 8 of Judges. Chapter 8 and verse 24 or 23. They wanted Gideon to rule over Israel. The men of Israel said, rule over us, both you and your sons. In verse 23, he said, I won't rule over you. But in verse 24, I would like to make a request. Each one of you give me earrings from your plunder, gold earrings. And they said, we'll gladly give them. And they spread out a garment. Each man threw the earrings from his plunder. And they said how much the weight of the gold was. Then in verse 27, Gideon made unto it an ephod and set it up. And all Israel played the harlot with it there. And it became a snare to Gideon and his house. That ephod was like a priestly robe of gold. And I think at that point, who knows? I mean, again, what do they say about faith? It ebbs and flows, right? And near the very end, after all this accomplishment, it sounds like from these verses, there was something there that he wanted to have that place of worship there. Maybe be having it in his city. Maybe to have some of that adulation and have that. But it was a snare to him. So the last point I would raise from this is we need to finish strong. Right? We need to finish our walk from fearful to faithful strong, always relying on God, always looking to him, because that human side so easily can creep in, right? When what happens now? The pressure cooker, right? The pressure, the valve of pressure was released, right? Usually we all know that in our personal lives. When things are going well, where's our reliance? Where's our faith? Where's our trust in God? I would dare say it probably ebbs a little bit off that high spot. Because things are going pretty well. We feel pretty comfortable. We feel like, you know what, maybe we can figure it out. And it's a danger. And it's that thing about always, no matter what circumstance we find in, that we know we have faith, we have trust in the goodness of God. To finish strong. To finish in a way that God would say, now I know. No matter what I throw at you, because we always think of it as the downside, right? Whatever bad stuff I throw you away. And what if God throws all this good stuff at you, right? That's equally as hard. Sometimes we might say, yeah, God, try it. Try it with me, right? I think I could do that, right? Why don't I ever get that chance? Throw me all this goodness and I'll still be faithful to you. Well, I would say that's probably a slippery slope as well. Probably a slippery slope. But we want to finish strong. And it's interesting sometimes. I just had this situation out. And back home in our front yard, we have this beautiful maple tree. Had it there. We've been there, I think, now 15 years. And it's one of those full maples that's really a signature spot in the front yard. Every fall, big yellow leaves. We love it. And it's just a wonderful tree. Well, this spring, for some unknown reason, no leaves. Absolutely not anything. So I had to have another tree cut down. I asked the gentleman who did that. I said, is there any chance this might come back? And he took a little twig, and it was brown. He said, no, it's dead. So just yesterday, I finally have been putting it off. We had it taken out. A big hole in the front yard. But again, it was hard to see because it seemed like a very faithful, mature tree that you could count on. But at the very end, something happened. And it was sad. And it's the most sad when something happens at the very, very end. When that full walk of moving across the finish line, for whatever reason, is not quite accomplished. And that's a little footnote you have there in Gideon. With all the good stuff, at the very end, he was wavering back to that side that's so easily for all of us to come back to. So I started the sermon talking about fear. And we all have different fears, different things that can consume us. But we know from God's word that we are called not to be fearful. And when I read verses where God lists these people will be in the kingdom and these will be outside the gates, fearful is one of those ones that say you're going to be outside the gate. And you stop to think about it, and sometimes on the surface, and I remember reading that years ago, it seemed a little difficult to understand that. I'm a little fearful. I'm a human being. I understand. But I think what God really wants us is to really take that part of ourself that is so independent, so self-reliant, so wanting to figure things out, and really throw that to the side. Really say, God, I don't even know. Like how many times did Solomon, when he first came in, God, I don't know how to direct my path. I want to look to you. I want to trust you in every way. I want to have the peace. Right? Isn't that a barometer? We evaluate ourselves and say, where am I in that fearful to faithful spectrum? I ask myself, where am I in my peace spectrum? How much peace do I have in my life? That's a good indicator of where I am on that spectrum. Right? If I have very little peace, fear is probably pervading my life too much. If I have more peace, probably my faith is continuing to grow. Those are the things that God would want us to see as his sons and daughters, to be ones who are totally reliant, totally faithful, as Abraham was, as Gideon was. And I think it's interesting that that's a hallmark of what God wants to find when he comes back. It's a huge building block as us as Christians as we walk every day. So I hope we can take some of these couple points here from the story of Gideon, as we know that's an important thing that we are called to become as people of courage, people of faith, people of trust in some very trying situations. When we talk about the future, I'll just take 1 minute here. I think back, and we all know stories of, you know, so much of the world has changed. So much of the things that we thought maybe 30, 40 years ago are different. So many of the things in a room would have been 10 times the size of this. Things have changed, and the future is sort of scary and troublesome. We don't know a lot, right? And it becomes easy then to start, you know, as Gideon did, look in different directions and paths. But God's called us to say, no matter where we land, we know God's word. We know his sovereignty. Right, that's the thing about it too. To know his greatness is another focal point in that process of knowing God's with us every step, and it's by his might. Because that's when it's really hard, when things get blurry and fuzzy, and it seems, where is God? When you can't see God, you forget about what? You forget about how powerful, how merciful, how loving he is. That's when we have to go back and claim those promises, because we don't know what the future holds. We simply do not know. But we know God's greatness, his love, his mercy, and he wants us to become children of faith. So I hope that was helpful. It was so great being back in the area again, being with you and seeing some familiar faces. I hope to chat for a few minutes more after services and hopefully get back here not as long as it took me to get here last time. But again, I hope however the road winds or where it goes, it's good knowing we have God's Spirit, God's family here, and hopefully we will all just continue to march forward and to keep the faith.